The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode of the America First podcast with me, Sebastian Gorka, is brought to you by Franklin Armory. Shop freedom, quality, and innovation at franklinarmory.com. Franklin Armory, we are facilitators of freedom.
Your Congress and our Parliament are the twin pillars of our civilizations and the chief among the many treasures that we have inherited from our predecessors. We, like you, are staunch believers in the freedom of the individual and the rule of a fair and just law. These principles are shared with our European partners and with the wider Atlantic community. They are the bedrock of the Western world.
The bedrock of the Western world that so links our two nations. That was a very special joint session of Congress in 1991 where Queen Elizabeth II addressed the American people. The longest reigning monarch of Great Britain. May she rest in peace. We are now connecting live across the Atlantic to talk to a good friend of America First to find out how that nation is reacting. He is Talk TV's Mike Graham. Mike, welcome back to America First.
Sebastian, thank you very much indeed. Very somber mood here, of course. We all knew the day would come, but we didn't really know how to prepare for it, you know. When the news broke, I was on the air literally within seconds. It wasn't on my show, but I was on another show and they called me in and I was very emotional. I don't mind telling you. I wasn't sure quite how to take it. You know, I described her as the mother of our nation. I described her as the woman who has seen off more prime ministers than any other in history, a woman who has personified Britain, really, and the British spirit and British determination, duty, service, all of those words we associate with Queen Elizabeth II. And it's a very emotional day for many people around the world, but particularly for people in Britain.
I can so relate to that lack of capacity to react, because I'm in my 50s. I grew up in the UK, and there seemed to be a permanence to this woman who we saw in photographs from World War II as an ambulance driver. We saw her with Winston Churchill, and then through the decades, all the way up through Margaret Thatcher and beyond, as if she could never leave. Right, Mike?
Yeah, exactly right. She's been part of the fabric of our nation, Sebastian, as you know, all my life. You know, and most people now in Britain would say the same. There are very few people left who remember her father when she became the Queen at the age of 27 in the early 1950s. You know, that was the beginning of something that nobody really could ever expect to last as long as it did. And she is the longest serving monarch. She is the second Elizabethan, as we sometimes like to call her. And it's going to be very difficult, I think, for the country to take this, you know, and understand it. I think it's going to take a long time for us to actually figure out what's happened.
So what is the mood of the people? How are they reacting? I saw some lovely posts on social media that a few hours ago there was a double rainbow above Buckingham Palace. It was deemed to be a gift from Elizabeth, yes, and from Prince Philip. Are crowds assembling right now, Mike?
Crowds are assembling outside Buckingham Palace. It started around about sort of, you know, 6 o'clock before actually the announcement, because people, I think, kind of knew that the Queen, you know, 96 years of age, was not in great shape. She had cancelled a meeting with the Privy Council, which was due to take place today. It had been a Zoom meeting that she couldn't do. She hadn't been able to come to London to anoint the latest Prime Minister, Liz Truss, that we'll speak about later. And so the feeling was that she wasn't very well, but, you know, she's 96, so you might expect that. And then because of what happened in Parliament today, Liz Truss was making her first kind of debating sort of debut, talking about energy and what she was going to do for the people of Britain. And suddenly we noticed that people were passing notes to one another inside the House of Commons chamber. And it became clear that something had happened. We weren't sure what. Because the people started to speculate, Buckingham Palace put out a statement saying that the Queen was under medical supervision, that she was comfortable, but obviously things had taken a turn for the worse. And I think the public generally then got the idea that, well, there's going to have to be another announcement. And when it came, the outpouring was remarkable. People have gone to Buckingham Palace. I haven't yet seen flowers, but I believe people were leaving flowers at Balmoral, which is up in Scotland near Aberdeen. And I think the nation's mood was very somber, because I think the thing about the Queen is that everybody has a story, whether it's a personal story of seeing her or whether it's a story of something that your mother may have told you or that you witnessed before. You know, for me, it was as a young man, a young boy, primary school, elementary school. We had a school very close to the Lord's Cricket Ground, and every summer the Queen would go past our school in her massive, great big Rolls Royce, and we would all go and line the streets waving Union Jacks. And I remember one time thinking she looked at me, you know, and it was a fascinating and wonderful memory to remember. And so it's part of your, you know, it's part of your family life. Everybody has a story like that.
Yeah, for me, I said for the 25th anniversary of the Silver Jubilee, I was given by a relative a mug with the Queen's face on it and the Royal Coat of Arms. And that was a treasured possession of mine as a seven-year-old back in 1977. Yes. Mike, it is the tradition. It has been for centuries. The Queen is dead. Long live the King. We already have King Charles III, as he will be known. What are the expectations? What are the concerns for this transition? You are a storied observer of the British political scene. Will this be smooth? Will this be a challenge for Charles?
I think it will be smooth. I mean, he's waited his entire life for this. He made his debut as the Queen's speechmaker, actually, in the last opening of Parliament, so the opening of Parliament, because she was not well enough to do it. And he seemed surprisingly nervous, considering that you would expect that this is a job that he's been wanting. But it's almost, in a way, bittersweet for him, because obviously it's a job he wants, but he doesn't like the way that he has somehow, you know, inherited the crown. But we've moved already very quickly to the fact that we now have a king. It's already, you know, long live the king. We're going to change the national anthem to God Save the King. And, you know, Charles is a bit of a curious character. He's flirted with, you know, the green agenda. He likes to talk to flowers. You know, he was hated by some people because of his affair with Camilla, who's now the Queen consort. The way he treated Diana is not, you know, particularly well liked by some. But, you know, the monarchy in the end is the monarchy, and we are run in a very stable way by a head of state who is not elected. And I think that makes us part of a very special relationship with our own royal family. And so I think he will respect that. I don't think he will go headlong into anything unusually, you know, anarchic. I don't think he's going to change anything too much, but it will be a massive wrench for the whole country. I mean, it'll take us a long time to get used to it.
Well, we have the whole hour with you. We're going to talk about what this means for relations between our two countries and how things are changing politically with a new prime minister as well in the UK. Mm. But I'm curious, when a famous person dies, a conservative or a pillar of the establishment, we saw that when Reagan passed, the troglodytes come out of the woodwork. Mm. Have the Republicans, have there been nasty voices, or are people behaving themselves in the UK?
They're by and large behaving themselves, but there are always some, you know, who crawl out of the woodwork from under stones. There's been the usual kind of, you know, black activists who have started saying things about slavery and racism and how the royal family represented everything that was wrong with you know, the British Empire and all the rest of it. Absolute garbage. Nobody takes them seriously. A couple of websites, you know, lefty websites have tried to poke fun at it. But the problem is for them, they don't speak for Britain. They don't speak for the majority of people in this country. And even Republicans, you know, representing something that they don't like, will still say the Queen was an amazing figure. She was a giant of the world stage. She met, more world leaders, I think, than anybody alive. She's been to more countries than anybody has ever been alive. She's been on more red carpets probably than anybody that's ever been alive. She knew everybody, as you say, from Churchill to Nelson Mandela to Bill Clinton to Mikhail Gorbachev, you know, even to the Saudi Crown Prince. You know, she's met them all. And I'm sure it would be great to know what she thought of all of them as well. But even those who are not that keen on the monarchy understand that she was an absolute legendary giant of world history.
Yeah, to think that she was in that position since her father died in 1952 is quite remarkable. And it would be fair to say the most loved institutional figure in the UK?
I think so. And probably the most famous person perhaps in the world, perhaps the most famous woman in the world. You know, forget about, you know, the Kim Kardashians of this world and Taylor Swift's, you know, this is the Queen of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. And she was also the Queen of an awful lot of countries in the Commonwealth, yeah. You know.
Yeah. So much to discuss. You've got to follow this guy. He has a superb show on Talk TV. He goes by the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You can follow him right now on Twitter at IROMG. Check out the amazing clips on his YouTube channel at Talk TV, especially when he takes common sense to the laughable, risible figures in the political, quote-unquote, elite of the UK. We will move on to discuss matters a little bit more political. I'm Sebastian Gorka. If you enjoy our show, especially our one-on-ones with the real newsmakers, the real experts, don't forget to subscribe. Go to Spotify and plug in my name, Sebastian Gorka, America First. Do leave us a 5-star review. It helps with the algorithms, as they say. And stay on this channel. MyPillow is having their biggest sheet sale of the year. You all have helped build MyPillow into the amazing company that it is today. Now, Mike Lindell, my buddy, the inventor and CEO, wants to give back to my listeners. The Percal bed sheet set is available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they're on sale. For example, the queen size is regularly $89.98, but now for you, just $39.98 with your listener promo. Order now, because when they're gone, they're gone. The Percal sheets are breathable and have a cool, crisp feel. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't miss out on this incredible offer. It's a limited supply, so be sure to order now. Call 1-800-829-8468, promo code Gorka, or just go to mypillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and plug in G-O-R-K-A. That's 1-800-829-8468 or mypillow.com, code Gorka.
Well, this is it, folks. Thank you, everybody, for coming out so early this morning. In only a couple of hours, I will be in Balmoral to see Her Majesty the Queen. And the torch will finally be passed to a new Conservative leader. The baton will be handed over in what has unexpectedly turned out to be a relay race. They changed the rules halfway through, but never mind that now. And through that lacquered black door, a new Prime Minister will shortly go to meet a fantastic group of public servants. The people who got Brexit done.
The people who got Brexit done. There's Bojo a couple of days ago standing in front of that. Is that a more famous door, especially black lacquered door, than 10 Downing Street? What does it all mean? The land of Brexit. Let's talk to our favorite purveyor of common sense. He is the caliph of the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk TV. Mike, welcome to America First.
Listen, Sebastian, it's always a pleasure. I'm not sure about the caliphate of the Independent Republic, but listen, we'll go with whatever you want to call it. But yeah, he got Brexit done, and now he's done. And I think we shouldn't forget what he was able to achieve for this country, because I think nobody else could have done it. You know, he was a man that completely revolutionized politics. He got tripped up by the system in the end. He had his faults. He did some things wrong. But those of us who wanted to leave the European Union, I think, will never forget that his legacy is simply Brexit. It's as big as that. It's as good as that. And that's all you need, really. That's all you wrote.
Yeah, no, we'll talk about what happened to Bojo. We'll talk about why we've had four conservative PMs in recent years, which is itself an interesting metric. But first, I know she wasn't your first choice. I know there was another female contender that you were hoping would become prime minister. But for our listeners here on this side of the pond, would you give us, I know you're supportive, the first PM question time, you tweeted out her great performance. What do we need to know about the new prime minister? She's been to see the Queen in Balmoral. She's been given the approval, the stamp of approval. What should Americans know about the new prime minister?
Well, first of all, she's the third female prime minister that we've had, and famously the Labour Party is unable, probably a bit like the Democrats, to actually define what a woman is. So it's a great piece of news that they've now again been bamboozled by the fact that, you know, somebody has appeared in front of them. They're not entirely certain what to call her, but we can call her a woman because we are quite able to do that. She is an independent individual. I was not entirely sure before today that she was the right person for the job. But actually, she's clearly very capable. She's come through a reasonably difficult upbringing. She was born in Scotland. She lived in the north of England for a while. She's not by any means an elitist. She didn't come through, you know, the private school system. She's not the product of Morgan Stanley or Goldman Sachs. You know, she's actually got a relatively normal marriage to a normal guy. She's got two teenage daughters. She understands what ordinary people are going through. And actually, after her performance today, as I said, I'm very convinced that she will be a great friend to America. She was actually, believe it or not, a Remainer. She wanted to stay in the European Union. But it's sometimes, you know what? When somebody's changed their mind, they're actually better at fulfilling the mandate. And she now is very, very capable of doing that than anybody. Because nobody in their right mind now, watching what happens in the European Union, would want any part of it. The place is a basket case. You know, they're still buying Russian gas. The Germans are going to have blackouts now. In the winter time, the French have got no clue what they're doing. You know, the place is ridiculous. So we now will be in a position, I think, to fire ourselves forward into the new century.
On the question of what the situation is like in Europe, I just saw this. This is from the Daily Mail. I'm just going to read this out because you don't want to believe it when you see it. Switzerland considers jailing anyone who heats their rooms above 19 degrees centigrade for up to 3 years. That's about 66 degrees if the country is forced to ration gas. So the Swiss are going to put you. So I had the guys from Trigonometry here in the studio a couple of weeks back, and they kind of shocked me because I follow British politics. I listen to you. I listen to them. But they said, they predicted that this winter, hearkening us back to the winter of discontent in the late 70s, it is going to be bloody hard for the British to heat their homes. And I thought, that's a bit weird. Can it really be that bad? But going on this, is this not hyperbole, Mike?
Well, the Swiss are doing that. In the summertime, the Spanish were saying that you could go to jail if you put your air conditioning on, if it wasn't, you know, higher than something like 90 degrees Fahrenheit, right? And I'm going, well, that's the end of me going to Spain then, because when I go to Spain, I like to crank up the air conditioning. I like to get in a very big car, drive it down to Malaga and put the air conditioning on and put the roof open. So, you know, if you're going to get jailed for that sort of thing, then thanks very much, but no thanks, I'm not going. The problem is worldwide right now, right? And it's how you deal with that. And Liz Truss has already said she's going to announce it tomorrow. She's going to say we will cap the energy prices. We will do whatever we can. And as much as the naysayers and the doom mongers, and particularly the lefties, would like you to believe that, you know, it's all the fault of the Tory government, they will eventually kowtow and we will all be fine. You know, I'm a believer in survival. I, like you, Sebastian, I lived through the 70s. I remember that we used to have a three-day week. I remember going to school one day a month because the school simply didn't have the energy to heat the building that we were in. I spent a lot of time in record shops. I spent a lot of time reading because we didn't have iPads in those days. There was nothing much to do. We had 1 hour of electricity in the morning and 1 hour in the evening because we were being held to ransom by the unions, right? This is not the same thing. This is the greedy oil companies who need to be told to just, you know, calm their jets and the government will take care of it, and we will make sure that we get through it. We will not be suffering blackouts in this country. The Germans can do that because they are so reliant upon, you know, Russian gas. Donald Trump told them they were doing the wrong thing years ago, and they make fun of him and laughed at him. There is a video, as I'm sure you've seen, and you've probably played it. They're making fun of Donald Trump and making out that he's an idiot. Well, guess who's laughing now?
Yeah, no, that was the speech he gave at the United Nations where he warned the European powers, including Germany, and the German delegation were tittering. They're not tittering anymore. So we grew up in the 70s. We were saved. Our nation was saved by Maggie Thatcher. There are already comparisons in just the last few days of Liz Truss, the new prime minister, to Maggie. I would say it's probably early days, given the fact that I think her parents were leftists. She herself, I think, campaigned for the abolition of the monarchy. If I had to label her, I would say she's probably a libertarian today as opposed to a conservative in the classical sense. But she's not quite Maggie yet, is she, Mike?
No, she really isn't. I mean, Maggie Thatcher was the embodiment of somebody who went to a grammar school. Unfortunately, the Labour Party did away with most of those years ago, and the Tory Party, to their shame, have not really brought them back. But she is very much a product of what I would call modern Britain. You know, she's been to university, she's had a reasonable kind of upbringing. But she's no elitist, as I say. She's not part of the kind of globalist agenda. She's not going to be hanging around with the sort of the Klaus Schwabs of this world, the World Economic Forum. She's not going to be sitting about wondering how she can get her next house in California like Rishi Sunak. She's not going to be getting, you know, any money from J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan, by the way, I should mention, the Merchant Bank, have actually just said this week that they're going to move all of the people they moved out of London because they're worried about Brexit. They're going to move them all back to London from Frankfurt because they're worried about the German blackouts. And so London will once again become, you know, the beacon of hope for the capitalist business. And Liz Truss will be at the forefront of that. And watching her today, she dealt with Keir Starmer, who looks ever more neutered. You know, he doesn't even look like a man anymore. I don't know whether he's still got his cojones, without wishing to be too rude. You know, she completely slaughtered him. And he had no comeback. So I think in that sense, she's Thatcherite. It remains to be seen whether her policies are as good.
Well, it's early days. We shall see. And we will be listening to Mike. You've got to check out the YouTube channel. You've got to listen to Talk TV. He is the head of the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, which are his initials on Twitter. That's IROMG. Talk TV is superb. It's like what we did here. I think we started the trend. It's radio, and then we put cameras in the studio, and voila, you get a little bit of TV. But it is your dose of common sense from across the channel. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. We don't want to be in the situation that the Swiss and the Germans are going to be in, but we've got two more years of this clown. The next time it may not simply be baby formula that's empty on the shelves. It may be things you actually need for the rest of your family to survive. Don't be in that position. Do what I do. I've got 2 months' worth of emergency supplies from the biggest and best provider in the company. It is my Patriot Supply. Right now, if you use my link, you will get $250 off their 3 month supply of inflation beating emergency rations. They last for 25 years. They're delicious. Never be in a situation where you can't feed your family. Go right now to preparewithgorka.com. That's preparewithgorka.com. It is your responsibility. If you enjoy our one-on-ones, don't forget to subscribe. Go to Spotify, plug in my name, Sebastian Gorka, America First. Write us a 5-star review. It does make a difference, and share the links. And then if you want your America First gear, the latest are our America First patches, our challenge coins from Team MAGA. Go to sebgorkastore.com. That's S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A, sebgorkastore.com. Uncle Tom 2 is the eye-opening documentary everyone in America should see. Sebastian Gorka here, and Uncle Tom 2 offers a compelling and brave analysis of the true history of Black America, the cultural shift from prosperity, integrity, and faith to the current perceived state of anger, discontent, and victimhood. Uncle Tom 2 offers historical footage, photos, correspondence, and data to reveal the genuine strides of Black America in the 20th century, the deliberate Marxist strategy to create racial tension and replace God with government, the NAACP's sinister agenda, the fall of Black Harlem, the truth behind Black Lives Matter, and the demoralization of America for political power. Don't miss Uncle Tom 2 from executive producer Larry Elder and director Justin Malone, with Brandon Tatum, Vodi Bocum, and Chad O'Jackson. Watch the movie on demand or buy the DVD now at salemnow.com. That's salemnow.com, salemnow.com.
Let us celebrate tonight as we've never done before. You and all of us have made history, and this is the greatest moment in the modern history of our great nation. Thank you.
That's Daddy Brexit, Nigel Farage. 17 million plus Brits said enough to the socialists in Brussels. We're leaving the EU. It was a long time in actually implementing it. Boris Johnson made it happen. I have to ask, Mike, I know after it happened, there was still a lot of futzing around at the edges, dickering with issues with the border, with Ireland, etc. What is the status? Are you finally free men and women in the UK? Is Brexit finally done?
Well, there's still one or two niceties, I would say, that have to be capped off. The first, of course, the European Court of Human Rights, which actually was something that was set up outside of the European Union. It was part of the Second World War settlement, if you like. But we need to get out of that as well, because as much as that was part of the idea of never having Nazi Germany again, as much as it was all about making sure that countries didn't go to war, it hasn't become that. What it's become is yet another kind of strand of the European Union. It's become like the dead hand of communism. It's become, you know, like the thing that lefty lawyers use to protect the rights of scumbags. They want to protect the rights of Albanian rapists, drug dealers. They want to stop it, stop us from deporting people to the likes of India and Pakistan and Morocco and, you know, all points east of there, you know, to places like Somalia, because we should, you know, respect their human rights. Well, you know what? We don't respect their human rights because they don't respect ours. If you want to come to this country to commit crime, if you want to come to this country to commit terrorism, we don't want you, and we don't want some ridiculous Strasbourg court to be able to stop it from happening. We want to kick you out. We want to kick you out. I'm hoping that Liz Truss will do that. She will do away with the European Court for Human Rights. And the reason Northern Ireland hasn't quite been fixed is entirely due to the intransigence of the French and the people in Strasbourg and Brussels. We need to take a very firm line with them and say, look, forget about it. We are going to do this, whether you like it or not. We're not trying to be nice. We're not trying to reach a settlement. We are simply leaving the European Union, and that means every single part of Britain needs to do that. Boris Johnson had a very interesting kind of theory. He basically said, look, if you want to get 100% of the bread, you take the 95 and you figure out the final 5%. That's the bit we need to do. I thank him for doing the 95, but we just need to press on now.
I think I remember a certain Ronald Reagan coming up with that phrase, if I get 80% of the loaf right now, that's good, and I'll get the 20% later.
Yeah.
What about the channel? What about all the footage? Nigel was covering this as well, of the immigrants that were building these camps in northern France, and then coming across on boats and being welcomed by the authorities. Has Brexit affected that? I mean, we've had 2 million illegals in just the last 18 months here. What's the status of the hordes coming across the channel?
Well, the status of that is that, as I've been saying for many years now, and so has Nigel Farage, these are criminals. You know, this is not a situation where people are coming because they're desperate to flee a war zone. You know, we've seen proper refugees, right? They're women and their children, the kind of people who come from Ukraine who need shelter because the Russians are bombarding the hell out of their houses and killing their men, right? These people who are coming here, it now turns out 60% of them are Albanian. And guess what the Albanians do? And I make no apology for this. And if somebody wants to say, oh, you're being a bit broad brush and you're making a few generalizations, Albanian people who come to this country are involved in drugs, they're involved in criminality, and they're involved in slavery, right? 60% now of the people crossing the channel to come to this country are Albanian criminals who have been kicked out of the country and are now coming back in a revolving door situation. And guess what? The lefties the friends of Joe Biden, the friends of Keir Starmer, Guardian-reading, muesli-munching losers, think this is great. Oh, because we're such a welcoming country. Well, I don't want to welcome cocaine dealers into my country. I don't care if they want to set up a fake barber shop in order to launder the money. You know, just stop them from coming. And if necessary, sink the boats while they're in the middle of the channel. Simple.
He is such a hater. He doesn't want to welcome drug pushers to the UK. What a hater you are.
I know.
That's why we love you. What about all those people, you know, like the LBC radio hosts who predicted as soon as Britain leaves, there will be no food. The economy will crash. The pound will sink. Are you eating cats and pigeons? What's the situation right now? Because you always tell me when I'm going out for a really nice, slap up lunch now. Are you forced to eat feral dogs at the moment?
Well, do you know, I had a very nice lunch today in a very nice Italian restaurant in Kensington. I had some very good veal, I had some pasta, I had some rosé wine, and I was offered some grappa, but I said, no, thank you. I've got to be on with Sebastian Gorka later, so I'm going to stay sober. But yeah, London is thriving, Sebastian, you'll be glad to know. All of these doom mongers are telling us that we're going to run. They told us last year we're going to run out of turkeys. We're going to run out of, you know, Brussels sprouts. Christmas is going to be cancelled. These people would rather that we lived in a feral kind of Dickensian manner. I don't know what's wrong with them, but they all live very high on the hog. They're all paid six-figure salaries. They all get driven around in Ubers. They all love their lives. But they can't stand the fact. I mean, old Keir Starmer today said, the trouble is, you know, we've had four Tory prime ministers in 6 years. Well, there's something missing from that sentence. We've had no Labour prime ministers since about, you know, 2010. And quite frankly, there's a reason for that. People don't like socialism in this country. They don't like Labour Party politicians. And they are never going to elect them because all they want to do is take the money that you make and that I make and give it to people who haven't got any. Well, there's a reason they haven't got any money, because they can't earn it, because they're stupid and or useless. And therefore, the conservative way is actually do everything for yourself, make sure that you provide for your family, make sure the government stays the hell out of your life, and taxes you less so that you can then spend money, let the economy grow, and everybody's happy.
What about those who were trying to subvert Brexit even after the vote? The people in the House of Lords, those billionaire lawyers as well, have they shut up? Have they accepted it, or they're still doing their sedition?
Well, you know what's interesting is that a couple of commentators today who are on the left side, who are on the Labour side, said the derangement syndrome which people suffer from about Brexit has completely confused them. Because now that Boris Johnson has gone, he's a bit like Donald Trump. He's a hate figure for these people, right? But now that Boris is gone, they're not really sure who to attack, because they can't really attack Liz Truss. She voted Remain, but now she's in charge of a Leave government. They voted for Labour, but they're useless, right? And so they're sort of flailing around trying to find a reason to hate Liz Truss, and they can't find one. Because she actually voted for what they voted for, but she's now seen sense, and now she's running the country, and therefore they're going to have to suck it up. It's as simple as that.
Well, you're lucky they're not doing what they're doing here, because my old boss has been out of office for almost 2 years now, and they're still bloody obsessed with him, as is the deep state, so they just can't give up. Dear friends, if you don't follow us on social media, you're missing out. Why? Because we post everything on every platform except the fascistic YouTube. So follow us on Truth Social, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, and of course, we stream the video live and then post all the segments on our Rumble channel. That's the First Amendment alternative to the fascists at YouTube. That's rumble.com/Seb Gorka, rumble.com/SEBGORKA. Mike, you've been on the show many, many times before. You're a real favorite. I love appearing on your show as well. But let's remind all of our listeners across the country that you had a very, very unusual journalistic or media career, because you haven't always been in the UK, have you, Mike? And you're a big fan of the US. So tell us a little about the time you've spent on the other side of the pond.
Yeah, well, I came to the US around about back end of 1983, 1984, just in time to enjoy Ronald Reagan's direction of travel. I came from London, which at the time had pretty much had a dreadful decade in the 70s. Margaret Thatcher had taken over in 1979, but the country still hadn't been sort of fixed. And I remember very well being so impressed. I came to New York City in the 80s, and I remember watching Ronald Reagan for the first time. And when he described the United States as being, you know, that gleaming sepulchre on the hill, I just thought, you know, that's exactly what America is. America is a gleaming sepulchre on the hill. And it stands for freedom. It stands for opportunity. I was able to make my fortune running a business, a media business in New York City. I traveled all over the country covering stories from the San Francisco earthquake to royal visits to all sorts of things going on. And it was a magical time. And New York at that time was wonderful. Now, New York has sort of gone backwards. And thanks to various mayors that they've had who have been, you know, Democrat mayors, I feel bad for my sort of heritage, because London now has become the new New York, it seems to me.
Right. And talk about, if you will, because you have that perspective from the 80s right up to now. I mean, we're of a certain age that we could easily be accused of being nostalgic. But when it comes to the media, I mean, back then, even if you voted Labour or voted Democrat, you could be a decent journalist. Mm. Is it not fair to say, is it not bipartisan to say that there really has been a drastic diminution in the quality of media on both sides of the Atlantic? And there are these, you know, islands of common sense like us here at Salem, mm-hmm. Newsmax, Talk TV, but the rest are just, I mean, really, 90% is hackery.
Yeah. I mean, I never thought I would live to see the day when I say to somebody, do you know what? That's the New York Times. I wouldn't believe that. Right. That's CNN. I wouldn't believe that. I remember when CNN started, when Ted Turner was in charge, and it was an incredible journalistic endeavor. You know, it was during the first Gulf War. I was watching it, as everybody else was around the world, 24 News that nobody had ever done before. And it was amazing to watch, and it was completely and utterly unbiased. Ted Turner was viewed as a bit of a maverick. You know, he might have been a bit right-wing, but it didn't alter what it was that they did. But CNN now, I'm sorry to say this, and I hope you'll forgive me if it's a bit graphic, I would not wipe my backside with anything that CNN does. I just wouldn't.
No, I agree. But when you look at what has happened in the interim, the diversification of platforms, the internet, the app systems that allow us to access news that we wish, what is the end state? Because you've seen Fleet Street, you've created your own news supply entity here in the United States, because it seems that market, for example, CNN, I wouldn't wipe my backside with it either, but as long as the Washington Post and other such entities can be kept alive as vanity projects for, you know, rich billionaires like Bezos, are we condemned to be running beside the disinformation purveyors, or do you have faith that sooner or later the market forces will cripple those who simply aren't journalists?
I mean, I'm not in favor of partisan journalism, period, you know, and I would like to think that I don't do that. I call out wrongdoing where I see it. You know, if the Conservative Party have done something stupid, I'm very critical of it, as you are. You know, I'm not slavish. I don't support one party or another. But what I do is I do not refer myself to, you know, any political party and defend it. But what I see now in Britain particularly, and I'm sure in the US as well, is quite high profile individuals, particularly columnists, particularly, you know, television personalities who are supposed to be journalists, who just clearly have an agenda. We've had a big row recently with the BBC. The BBC is a leftist organization. It's riddled with champagne socialists. You know, Emily Maitlis is a woman that your viewers might not have heard of.
No. They know, because I had a little... She discussed me in her recent lecture as one of the examples. Oh, yes. She said, I'm one of the examples of the people that shouldn't be allowed to be interviewed on mainstream media, because she has yet to recover from the interview she tried to do with me, Mike.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, one of the people I had lunch with today is her former producer, who was the person that got the Prince Andrew scoop, right? And she's told me some quite interesting information about Emily Maitlis, which I will share with you at some point or other. We're not going to do it now. But this is a woman who is ghastly, who does not give any credit to the people that work for her, who has always been left-wing, who has now gone off to work for that left-wing organisation, LBC, where our good friend James O'Brien uses to steep in his sewer, right? And these people are an absolute laughingstock. Ordinary members of the public, ordinary people who get up every day, try to make sure they have food on the table for their children, they couldn't care less about Emily Maitlis. Emily Maitlis thinks that she represents people in this country. She represents nobody. No one.
But she, that lecture, I watched the whole thing. She's very, very impressed with herself. He's Mike Graham. Yeah. You've got to listen to him. You've got to watch him talk TV. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. If you've got one of these blasted cell phones, please tell me it's not connected to one of the big cell phone providers. Join the good guys, the only Christian conservative cell phone company in America. They share your values. They believe in freedom of speech, the sanctity of life, and the Second Amendment. Please support them today. You can keep your old number. You can switch so easily by calling 972-PATRIOT. Use my name to get free activation. Special discounts for veterans and first responders. They have the same nationwide coverage. Join the good guys today. Don't fund your enemies. 972-PATRIOT. PatriotMobile.com/Gorka. That's PatriotMobile.com/GORKA. Join today. So at the beginning, you made this, for those who aren't familiar with it, you quipped about how the left, Labour, Keir Starmer, are a little bit challenged because this is the third female prime minister head of the Conservative Party, and they have yet to be able to define what a woman is. There are some amazing interviews of left-wing politicians being asked to define and then waffling for about 12 minutes. Yeah. So let's talk about this, because I think this is the key issue of the modern political age. I believe that when it comes to a midterm election here in the United States, when it comes to just common sense in general, those who are apolitical, those who aren't steeped in what you and I do every day, Mike, they look at the transgender extremists, they look at the drag queen story hours, the pornographic books in schools, what the Tavistock was doing in the UK to brutalize children and pretend that they're changing their sex, that this will be that moment where the scales fall from the eyes for millions and they wake up and they realize just how insane and radical the left has become. Talk to us about what's happening in the UK. Are you seeing sense? Is the shutting down of the Tavistock transgender clinic as big a deal as I think it is? Or are we still very much at the beginning?
No, it very much is. And I think you can see the tide has turned in a very, very big way. Funnily enough, just over the course of the last few weeks of the summer, the Tavistock clinic closing was a massive event. It was realization by an awful lot of people in this country that something was happening they didn't even know about. You know, the schools were actually telling people that children as young as 8 could determine their gender. That in Scotland, it was becoming possible at the age of 5 to determine your gender. Do you know, we talk about the European Union being out of control. There is a young teacher in jail right now in Ireland, right, under the auspices of EU law, who is in jail not for molesting children, not for killing children. He's in jail because he refused to recognize their pronouns, because he's a good Christian and he wants to stay Christian.
Yeah, he refused to recognize the fake pronoun of a child who said, "I'm no longer a boy today, I'm a girl." And he said, "You're not." And then he was put in jail.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. I mean, and we talk about this as though it's just another happening of the kind of the mad world that we live in. But it's absolutely unbelievable that somebody could be languishing in a prison. You know, meanwhile, paedophiles are walking around. Meanwhile, people who dress as women. You know, Eddie Izzard, right? I don't know if you're familiar.
The comedian Eddie Izzard, who was a cross-dresser. You know, 20 years ago, he'd wear a skirt, but now he actually says he's a woman, right?
Yeah, in my day, we called people like him a tranny, right? Yeah. He's a tranny. Let's say it, and let's not be ashamed of saying it. He's a tranny. He likes dressing as a woman. I don't know why. I can't imagine why he would think that makes him look attractive. Quite frankly, he looks about as ugly as the ugliest old auntie you ever had in your life, right? He's going to apparently stand for election in a constituency for the Labour Party, and they're insisting that we call him she. Well, I'm sorry, but as long as he's got what we describe as a meat and two veg scenario, he's not a she. He's a he.
But here I come with the disturbing observations. You know, Lawrence Fox posted in others. When you've got British Army veterans being arrested by the police because they reposted something on Facebook that somebody found offensive, then aren't you losing the battle? When the British Bobby is arresting people because somebody's feelings got hurt, what's it going to take to get back to some kind of sanity?
Well, it's a good one to bring up that, because actually what it did take for the return to sanity was for Lawrence Fox and for some of those allies of his, and I count myself amongst them on this particular cause, to kick up such a stink that the police officers in that instance apologised to the veteran that they arrested.
Wow.
And they admitted that they got it wrong. And the College of Policing, which has trained these bozos in the police to actually arrest people because they cause somebody some anxiety, that they are no longer now teaching that, and they are no longer instructing their police officers to do it. I have a great deal of respect for police officers. They do a very hard job, but they're ruined and they're let down by the management, who are full of quotas for diversity, full of quotas for the transgender brigade, painting rainbows all over the place, making sure that, you know, they're dancing the Macarena instead of actually, you know, hitting thugs around the head with a rubber truncheon, which is what I'd like to see. You know, the world has gone completely mad, but I believe we're winning. I believe that when you and I have this conversation, Seb, in a couple of months' time, the whole trans debate will have disappeared up its own backside.
Wow, you heard it here first. What about the system? You said that Boris Johnson fell afoul of the system. Is the elite still, you know, Bannon here calls it, Steve Bannon calls it the Uniparty, the mutual back-scratching of the two parties. Are they still in control? Is Liz Truss a shot across the bows? Or are we still victims to this? You know, he went to Eton with her, they went to Oxbridge, therefore it's all one big cabal of chumminess.
Well, you know, yes and no, I would say to that, because yes, if you get to the top in any party political system, you have to have played by some rules, if not all. But Boris Johnson managed it. He was a rebel. He overstepped the mark, and he mostly just tripped himself up by making mistakes which were not political. And of course, the establishment were out to get him, but he was outside the establishment, I think, in the same way that Liz Truss was. If we had had Rishi Sunak elected, you know, a man who doesn't seem to realise which continent he lives on. He's got a house in Santa Monica. He's got a swimming pool up in Yorkshire in his house, which costs more to heat than you would pay for your mortgage in a year. You know, he loves the idea of being globalist. He loves the idea of the European Union. And he pretends that despite the fact that his wife is one of the richest women in the entire world, richer than the Queen, that he feels our pain when we can't switch on the electricity. You know, I mean, this is a bloke who wears 500... pound Prada shoes to go to a building site to discuss how poor people are. You know, these are the people that we have to be aware of. I think Liz Truss, you know, that we have, you know, perhaps if you and I were able to choose precisely who we wanted, it wouldn't be Liz Truss, but she's the best of a bad lot, and I think she'll do okay.
It beggars belief why these people even want to get involved in politics. They're just... Yeah. All right. We talked to Mike Graham. He runs the Independent Republic, not a caliphate, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. The Twitter account is IROMG. But you've got to watch, especially I love when he takes it to those politicians, especially in front of the House of Commons. It's a great YouTube channel. It is Talk TV. Watch it, follow it, listen to it. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First, coming to you from just outside the insalubrious, fetid, malodorous swamp that is Washington, D.C. from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor, pain relief that works. Pain relief that's real, pain relief that's liberating. 500,000 Americans right now, me included. But it's not just me. It's people like Reggie from Florida. This is a little Reggie story. I have a lot of pain from aging, and after only 4 days of using Relief Factor, I'm already experiencing less pain and stiffness. Can't wait to see how I feel in a couple more weeks. Relief Factor is a blessing sent by God. Powerful words. Find out for yourself. There's only one way, but it's super easy. Order the 3-week quick starter pack at ReliefFactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do. And I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Reggie, and 500,000 of your fellow Americans. What are you waiting for? It costs just $19.95. What have you got to lose? Well, apart from the pain. Call today, 800-500-8384, or just go to ReliefFactor.com. That number again, 800-500-8384, ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Brexit is perhaps, and I don't think this is pushing hyperbole, perhaps one of the biggest political events since the Magna Carta. The biggest vote, the largest number of Brits that said, we want our sovereignty back. We want to leave this collectivist, socialist construct that is the European Union. I'm curious, because I follow British politics because I was born there. I follow Hungarian politics because of my parents. But the rest, less up there in terms of my priorities. Do you have a sense, Mike, that the British decision could be catalytic, that other nations like Poland or Italy that have a, you know, a sense of Christian heritage and want to be independent, or the Baltic states, could Brexit be the first of a chain reaction, or is it because you're just a bunch of bloody-minded Brits and you had to be different?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, there is definitely a sense in all countries. I mean, we speak to an awful lot of people in Italy, for example, in France, in Brussels, in Belgium itself, the headquarters of the European Union, in Spain, in Catalonia, the people who want independence of Catalonia and are being prevented from even having a referendum on it by the European Union. You know, incredible. Absolute arrogance that comes from the EU. And they have done things, I would say, in the last 2 years, which have really undermined their own authority. During COVID, they were useless on the vaccines. They were actually not only critical of the British rollout, but they actually tried to invade factories in the European continent where the vaccines were being manufactured in order to seize them, to stop them from being sent to Britain. And this was because they were very, very clear that Britain was no longer in the EU. So they were actually willing to jeopardize the health of people in Britain because they were fed up and upset about the fact that we had left the European Union. The reason that they keep sending these migrants to us is because they think that that's a good punishment as well. But people in Italy are fed up. People in Spain are fed up. The French are fed up. And they have completely screwed up the whole situation with Russia. As Donald Trump pointed out, not only Germany, but the entire sort of European continent has become reliant on Russian gas. They've all decided to go green in order to just say that we don't produce any of our own fossil fuel, but they buy it all in. So they have stewarded what can only be described as an economic disaster, a social disaster. Angela Merkel is now being blamed. She was once thought to be the great saviour of the European continent. She now looks like the woman who is responsible for flooding the European continent with what can only be described as single young men of fighting age who have literally come to our continent and ruined it. Parts of Paris now are no-go areas, right? And this is not about racism. It just so happens that they're from Africa. It just so happens that they happen to be, you know, they happen to be black. But they've ruined most major European capitals with this flood of immigration. And most of it is from people who are ne'er-do-wells, criminals, and at the very least of it, beggars, you know. Best case scenario, they're beggars. Worst case scenario, they're bloody terrorists.
I remember so well after that terrorist attack at the Christmas market in Germany. She gave that speech the next day and she said, but we're still going to keep our borders open. That is utter suicide, and that's who Angela Merkel was. But we have hope as long as the Brits are there with their indomitable bulldog spirit, the old Tommy spirit, and you are an exemplar of that. Please, guys, follow him. He is the king of common sense at talk radio, although he runs Republic. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This has been America First One-on-One. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, keep your head on a swivel, watch your six, hold the line, never give up, never give in, and stay frosty.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
I have a dream.
Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people... and the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again! This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
Your Congress and our Parliament are the twin pillars of our civilizations and the chief among the many treasures that we have inherited from our predecessors. We, like you, are staunch believers in the freedom of the individual and the rule of a fair and just law. These principles are shared with our European partners and with the wider Atlantic community. They are the bedrock of the Western world.
As is being said today across the United Kingdom, the Queen is dead, long live the King. The longest reigning monarch in British history has passed this afternoon at Balmoral, her Scottish residence. 70 years and 7 months, the longest reigning monarch verifiable in history, apart from Louis XIV. A lady who ascended to the throne in 1952, her coronation occurred the year later, who has been a rock, a symbol of tradition and the values of that nation that granted us so many of our values here in America. I was born in the UK. I served in the British Army. Our cap devices in the British Army said ER and the Roman numeral 2, Elizabeth Regina II. This woman has seen wars come and go, presidents, prime ministers come and go. Her address that you just heard was from a special joint session of Congress in 1991, where she talked about the values of our two nations. There is a quote-unquote special relationship between the United Kingdom and the United States. So many of our founding fathers were shaped not simply by the unjust nature of her predecessor King George's treatment of the people living here in the American colonies, but understood and brought the best values of Western civilization, of the United Kingdom, to this country. Not with a monarchy. Yes, they offered that to George Washington, but with a republic built on the self-same values upon which the UK was built. Individual liberty. The importance of understanding that power does not reside simply in some person because of their family name or their control of the monopoly of force, but because their power is derived from the sovereignty of the people. Their mandate comes from the people. It's difficult for me to talk about these things because, well, I've chosen another home for myself. I am now a proud American citizen. I have sworn in my naturalization ceremony to eschew, to reject all foreign potentates, and to, yes, that's actually the wording, to be loyal to the Constitution of the United States. And it is the highest honor I've had, not simply to become a citizen of the greatest nation on God's earth, but to twice take the oath after my naturalization to serve this nation, first in the Defense Department and then in the White House as deputy to the president. But I'd like us Americans together to understand not just the import of that special relationship, because despite breaking out of the United Kingdom, being born in revolution against that monarchy and that parliament, we have over time become exceptionally close. when it comes, for example, to national security cooperation, the sharing of the highest level of secrets, the stationing of our forces on UK territory, or the cooperation shoulder to shoulder with British Tommies in war zones around the world. That relationship has proven itself over time. Of late, it has been strained, and we understand that. As forces that wish to counter the sovereignty of both our peoples, the so-called elite uniparties, the Davos set, have done everything they try to undermine the sovereignty of our peoples, we have found ourselves once more. Much of what Queen Elizabeth represented, although she never spoke out openly about it, which of course is the right thing for the monarch to have done, I think was obvious when it comes to what the UK did in recent years. Reasserting their sovereignty, the decision of 17 plus million members of the Isles, the British Isles, to divest themselves of that system that so undermined their sovereignty and to leave the European Union, the so-called Brexit, that paved the way for so much that was similar here in America. The rejection of the unreliable, the non-representative, the arrogant elites on both sides of the Atlantic. Without Brexit, there is no MAGA. Without Nigel Farage, I think there is no Donald Trump. So let us say a prayer today for the repose, for the soul of one of the great leaders of the 20th century. She was there. She was there when Winston Churchill became her prime minister. She was there when Margaret Thatcher took that position. A historic figure. A figure who will go down in history as embodying some of the greatest facets of our civilization, the greatest civilization known to man, the West. A great empire as it was, that helped to give birth to our own republic. Let's say a prayer for those who are mourning her today, her loved ones, her family members. Prince Charles will be taking on the moniker of King Charles III, a man who has been waiting all his life for this position. Will he live up to that task? It's too early to tell. As a Brit who is now an American, I will tell you this. The greatest aspects of our nations together are the greatest aspects of our civilization. Perhaps we can rebuild that relationship now in a new era where we have said the people are what matters. The people provide the sovereignty of those above them, and always just temporarily. Because it is the people that matter, because it is the people who are made in the image of our Creator, our Lord and Savior. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. We will be joined by one of my good friends in the UK for the third hour, Mike Graham, who will give us an update on how the Brits are faring, what it means for England, for Scotland, for Wales, for Northern Ireland, and for the relationship with us here in America. I'm Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to President Trump. This is America First. Subscribe, go to Spotify, put in my name, put in America First, give us a 5-star review, share the links, because we have so much more work to do together.
Three.
three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.